are listening to Cal's low power but mighty radio station on 107.3 FM in greater downtown Occidental, California, where we are just having one good time all the time. Community radio for West Sonoma County. Streaming on the world web at Cows FM. Just Google Cows FM and you will be there. And you can get us anywhere in the world. If you ever want to call the station, you just call 707-874-1073. You won't be right on the air, but we can put you on the air after that. So, and if you want to email Cows, it's KOWS@sonic.net. And if you'd like to support us, which we would love you to do, because it's just a volunteer effort here, in non-profit, of course, send donations to Cows, KOWS, P.O. Box 1073, just so that you remember. It's all 1073 in Occidental, California. We have a great few of underwriters that have already pledged themselves to us in their offerings, and we'd like to thank Coffee Cats in Sebastopol as a new supporter. Coffee Cats is the first coffee roaster in Sebastopol. Coffee Cats holds a bluegrass and old-time music jam every Saturday from 2 to 5. Coffee Cats hosts a number of different events. All events are held from 7 to 9 p.m. Find out more by visiting our store in downtown Sebastopol, now here for our 21st year of business. You all know where Coffee Cats is. It's right on Sebastopol Avenue. And it is at, and their number, if in case you want to call them, is 326-8108. Thanks, Coffee Cats. You're great cats. Cal's Community Radio would also like to thank a new fundraising effort called Give Place. Give Place is an online marketplace where you can sell, donate, or buy things. Everything sold on Give Place gives 10% to 100% of its proceeds to your favorite local nonprofit organization. You can support Cows Radio by buying and selling on Give Place. Go to giveplace.com. Give Place is the Craigslist for local nonprofits. Thank you for selling and buying on giveplace.com. Well, this is Diane Timberman, and you are listening to a rather new show called Redwood Radio Muse Drama. This is a very special event that we have tonight for your enjoyment. It's a very special Mother's Day radio show that's going to be revisiting some of our children's theater productions that I've done in the past. We're going to be doing the Mad Hatter scene from Alice in Wonderland and the Beauregard scene from Willy Wonka and some various crazy scenes from James and the Giant Peach. With us here tonight is Arnold Levine, better known to some of you as Arnaldo, the world-famous Occidental DJ, an old hand here, who will be helping us engineer and doing sound effects to make it more interesting, and we'll also be reading parts. So, but we know Arnold can do it all at once. He's done it before. And also here are some players that we have had in the past that when they were children, Shana Solomon Camacho, who is she played when she was a kid in James and the Giant Peach, and her son, Emilio Camacho, is now going to be one of our actors, and he's a very talented young man. We're very happy to have him. We also have a couple of kids that you might already know, Jasmine and Bella, Jasmine and Isabella, Jasmine Siano, Siana, thank you, and Jasmine Siana Taylor, and Bella Isabella May Taylor.
We have a show on Mondays from 3 to 5.
Yeah,
with the Bella and Jazzy show.
Right, and they have Mamacita. All kinds of wonderful interviews and music and carryings on, like just for kids.
No, for everybody.
For everybody. But it'd be definitely a kid show that the kids would enjoy hearing their own age.
We play a lot of adult music, too.
Oh, I'll bet you do. Yeah.
My mom.
It's not just for kids, but it's an amazing thing for kids to listen to. It's a kids their own age on the radio with their own show. And I was so impressed by them when I heard what they were doing. One day, I asked them to be our actors for this show. And it's going to be a fun one. We also have my own daughter, Tara Timberman.
Hi.
who used to be a little actress with us, too. She was actually the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland when we produced it. And an Oompa Loompa with Willy Wonka and probably some other things. And she's been on the stage for a long time, too. And she still is on the stage. She's a recording artist in the Bay Area and doing wonderfully well. Some two albums published already and is in great demand there in the Bay Area. Tara, you want to come to the mic?
It's www.metalmother.net.
Metal Mother. But that is not heavy metal music. It's very original and timely. And she plays the piano all herself, and she's the singer-songwriter of the group. It's really good. Her first album has. If you go to her website, you can also see music videos for both of the albums. And so, very happy to have her here. Although she just had a big gig in San Francisco a couple of days ago, and she's playing minor roles tonight. But we're very happy to have her here. So, without further ado, we should get started. What we're doing first is Alice in Wonderland, and that was one of my favorite plays that we've ever done here. I did it at the community center with a bunch of kids from Harmony School. Oh, gosh, it was a multimedia event. We had a big screen up there. We had people Alice falling down the tunnel with the white rabbit.
So many projections, and you had all sorts of crazy sets for Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, all those beautiful, beautiful hand painting by it.
Backdrops.
Right, and we always had a flowing river. We had a real flowing chocolate river.
That's Willy Wonka.
Oh, nope, that's the wrong play.
But for Alice in Wonderland, you had her falling down with the
falling down this tunnel. And swimming in the sea, and original music. But anyway, we're going to be doing the Mad Hatter scene, in which Tara actually played the Mad Hatter. But Arnaldo is going to be playing the Mad Hatter in his inimitable Irish accent.
Irish.
I'm making a joke, kids. He's trying to find his hat. His Mad Hatter hat. Here, Mad Hatter. Who we have here is Alice. Alice is being played by Isabella.
Hey.
The Mad Hatter by Arnold. The Hare is played by Emilio. The Dormouse is Jasmine. And I'm giving the stage directions.
Granny's always raving and ranting, and she's always puffing and panting, and she's always screaming and shouting, and she's always brewing up tea. He loves his leg of beef, and he washes it down with the brandy and a French made pot of tea. Have a cup of tea.
Goody, a teapot. It's a tea party. May I introduce myself?
No, you may not.
But aren't introductions proper at a tea party?
My dear child, if you want an introduction, go and get yourself an orchestra. They'll give you a good 4-bar introduction. or probably even an 8-bar introduction.
I just wanted to give you my name.
Why, have you finished with it? Did you hear that, Mr. Hare? She wants to give us a name.
Ridiculous. We already have names. We certainly don't need hers.
May I sit down?
No room, no room, no room.
There's plenty of room.
Hare, as she seats herself.
Have some milk.
I don't see any milk.
There isn't any.
Then it wasn't very polite of you to offer it.
It wasn't very polite of you to sit down without being invited.
I didn't know it was your table. It's laid for a great many more than three.
The Hatter, seated next to Alice, has been staring more and more fixedly at her hair, and now lifts a lock of it critically.
Your hair needs cutting.
You should learn not to make personal remarks. It's very rude.
Hatter, after opening and shutting his eyes rapidly several times.
Why is a robin like a writing desk?
Oh, I'm glad you've begun asking riddles. I believe I can guess that.
Do you mean that you think you can find out the answer to it?
Why, yes.
Then you should say what you mean.
I do. At least, I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know.
Not the same thing a bit. Why, you might just as well say that I see what I eat is the same thing as I eat what I see.
You might as well just say that I like what I get is the same thing as I get what I like.
You might as well say that I breathe when I sleep is the same thing as I sleep when I breathe.
It is the same thing with you.
Taking out his watch, shaking it and holding it to his ear.
What day of the month is this?
The 4th.
2 days wrong.
Glaring at the hare.
I told you butter wouldn't suit the works.
It was the best butter.
Yes, but some crumbs must have got in as well. You shouldn't have put it in with the bread knife.
It was the best butter, you know.
What a funny watch. It tells the day of the month and doesn't tell what time it is.
Why should it?
Does your watch tell what year it is?
Of course not. But that's because it stays the same year for such a long time.
Which is just the case with mine.
I don't quite understand. But there's something I came to ask you.
The Dormouse is asleep again.
Dormouse, as the Hatter pours tea on his nose.
Oh, of course, of course. Just what I was going to remark myself.
Have you guessed the riddle yet?
No, I give up. What's the answer?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Nor I.
I think you might do something better with your time than wasting it and asking riddles that have no answers.
If you knew time as well as I do, you wouldn't talk about it. It's him.
I don't know what you mean.
Of course you don't. I dare say you've never even spoke to time.
I know I have to beat time when I learn music.
Ah, that accounts for it. He won't stand beating. Now, if you only kept on good terms with him, he'd do almost anything you liked.
The white rabbit needs more time.
To the hare.
Tatter.
Tatter.
Is that the way you manage?
Not I. We quarreled last March, time and I. Just before the hare went mad, you know. It was the great concert given by the Queen, and I had to sing,
rising and striking a pose.
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at. You know the song, perhaps.
I've heard something like it. I prefer Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Skunk, how I wonder if you're drunk.
Or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Ant, you do look strange without your pants.
If you don't mind. Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder where you're at. Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle.
Twinkle, 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 twinkle.
Pinch that Dormouse.
Pull his whiskers.
And they both do.
Well... Well, he hardly finished the first verse when the Queen bawled out, "He's murdering time! Off with his head!"
How dreadfully savage!
And ever since then, Time won't do a thing I ask. It's always 4 o'clock now.
Huh. Is that the reason so many tea things are put out here?
Yes, that's it. It's always tea time, and we've no chance to wash the things between times.
Then you keep moving round, I suppose.
Exactly so, as the things get used up.
But what happens when you get to the, come to the beginning again?
Well, let's change the subject. I want a clean cup. Let's all move one place on.
He unceremoniously shoves Alice out of the chair and takes it for himself. Here to Alice as they take Dormouse's arm.
Lend a hand here, can't you?
They shift one place with the still sleeping and snoring Dormouse.
There. Now, Mr. Hatter, I wanted to ask you a question. It's about your visit to the palace this morning. Did you?
I deny it. Absolutely not. I vote the young lady tells us a story.
I'm afraid I don't know one, but my question...
The Dormouse shall. Wake up, Dormouse. Pinch him, old fellow.
I wasn't asleep. I heard every word you were saying.
Tell us a story.
And be quick about it, or you'll be asleep again before it's done.
Once upon a time, there were three little sisters, and their names were Elsie, Lacey, and Tilly. They lived at the bottom of a well.
What did they live on?
They lived on molasses.
They couldn't have done that. They'd have been ill.
So they were. Very ill.
Oh, but why did they live at the bottom of a well?
Take some more tea.
I haven't had any yet, so I can't take more.
You can't take less, you mean. It's very easy to take more than nothing.
Nobody asked your opinion.
Oh, who's making personal remarks now?
Why did they live at the bottom of a well?
Dormouse, poked awake by Hatter and Hare.
Eh? Oh, it was a molasses well.
There's no such thing.
Shh!
If you can't be quiet, you'd better finish the story for yourself.
No, please go on. I won't interrupt you again. There may be one molasses well.
One indeed. And so these sisters, they were learning to draw, you know.
What did they draw?
Molasses.
But I don't understand. Where did they draw the molasses from?
You can draw water out of a water well. So I should think you can draw molasses out of a molasses well, stupid.
But they were in the well.
So they were. Well in. They were learning to draw, as I said. And they drew all manner of things. Everything that begins with an M.
Why with an M?
Hare pinching the Dormouse, which has fallen asleep again.
Why not?
That begins with an M, such as mousetraps, and the moon, and memory, and muchness. Did you ever see such a thing as the drawing of muchness?
Really, now that you ask me, I don't
then
think...
Then you talk.
Oh, this is the stupidest tea party I was ever at in all my life.
Turning back angrily to the Hatter.
But I don't think you could have stolen this Queen's Sugar Tarts. It was too cleverly done.
The Queen's Sugar Tarts?
Stolen?
What for?
Bread and butter does well enough for tea.
It's the best butter.
Sugar tarts indeed.
No sugar tarts, we don't want any.
Sell them elsewhere.
Go away.
No room.
No room, no room, no room, no room,
no room, no room, no room, no room.
Oh, horrid things. What a dreadful waste of time seeing them. But if the Hatter didn't take the sugar tarts, it must have been the Griffin. I must find him quickly. Do you suppose he stole them? Do you? We'll soon see.
So off she goes on her merry adventures through Wonderland.
Along came a lady.
We're here again with Willy Wonka for your enjoyment now. And Willy Wonka was a great favorite of mine. Tara, do you remember some of the things we did then? With Willy Wonka,
you had a waterfall of chocolate milk. You had
down a ladder.
So many donations from the candy store that all of the children not handle it. We had to go through all of the rehearsals
hanging off
with
the trees.
Candy sitting there in front of us, not eat it all. And you had when Charlie floated. He was on a pulley. He was actually
Dave Tucker was in the back of the ceiling, with the back of the curtain. Actually, pulling up a grown child.
Swinging around.
In the fizzy lifting room.
And Veruca Salt when she ate the gum, which I think is the scene that you're gonna do.
Not Veruca. Violet.
So Violet.
She was a rotten egg.
Blew up like a
actually
big,
we had a pump in the back. We had a tank full of gas. And we pumped and there was a little tube out the back of her costume. We had made this little inner tube in her costume. The nitrous gas, I think it was, pumped right into her.
No, it was helium.
No, it wasn't, because that would be floaty. But I think it was nitrous actually. And so she had this like this vest, a two-sided vest that was all, it was garbage bags taped together under her dress, and it actually blew up to be about 2 feet around. She looked like a blown up blue, and she burst her belt, and it was the dress was made to be a big brown balloon with her legs coming out of like little bloomers out of the bottom. And the Oompa Loompas actually rolled her around on the stage and rolled her off. It was hilarious.
It was really good.
And Guinevere did hair and makeup.
Oh, yes. And my daughter Guinevere, who is actually voted Best Actress of Sonoma County in 1996, would come and do makeup for all of our shows. And Shayna's just remembering that fondly. You remember Shayna, Gwen, if you're out there listening? She remembers you. And it's not the first time somebody has commented on your makeup abilities. So we thank Gwen, too, who would probably like to be here with us right now. To get on with the show, we are going to do the Violet Beauregard scene from Willy Wonka, in which my son Paul was also Mr. Beauregard. But he had a gig tonight, so he couldn't be here. And, I mean, last night, and he's still recovering. all of these children are in show business, and it's wonderful. Because they were on stage since they were like 4. They have no fear of entertaining. So here we are with Willy Wonka being played by Arnold O. Arnold O. Charlie being played by Emilio. Grandpa Joe being played by me. And Violet being played by Jasmine, Mr. Beauregard by Shayna, Veruca by Isabella May Taylor, Mr. Salt by Shayna, and Tara will play Mike and his mother. Delightful characters. Okay, well, without further ado, let us embark on the wild and wacky Willy Wonka tour.
No, don't, please. Forgive me, but no one must look under there. This is the most secret machine in my entire factory. This is the one that's really going to sizzle old Slugworth.
What does it do?
Would you like to see?
Yeah. But what does it do?
Don't Don't you see? It makes everlasting gobstoppers.
Did you say everlasting gobstoppers?
That's right. For kids with very little pocket money, you can suck 'em forever.
I want an everlasting gobstopper.
Me too.
And me.
Fantastic invention. Revolutionised the industry. You can suck 'em and suck 'em and they'll never get any smaller. At least, I don't think they do. A few more tests.
How do you make them?
I'm a trifle deaf in this ear. Speak louder next time. Who wants an everlasting gobstopper?
Me,
I do.
I can only give them to you if you solemnly swear to keep them for yourselves and not show them to another living soul as long as you all shall live.
Agreed.
Good. One for you, and one for you, and one for you.
What about Charlie?
And one for Charlie.
Hey, she's got two. I want another one.
Stop squawking, you twit.
Oh, everybody has had one, and one is enough for anybody. Now, come along, over here, if you'll follow me. I have something rather special to show you.
Well, it's special, all right. I only hope my Veruca doesn't want one.
What a contraption!
Isn't she scrumptious? She's my revolutionary, non-pollutionary, mechanical wonder. Now, button, who's got the button?
It's over there.
There.
It's over there. Here?
There.
What you are witnessing, friends, is the most enormous miracle of the machine age. The creation of a confectionery giant. Finito.
That's all?
That's all? Don't you know what this is?
By gum, it's gum.
Wrong. It's the most amazing, fabulous, sensational gum in the whole world.
What's so fab about it?
This little piece of gum is a three-course dinner.
Bull.
No, roast beef, but I haven't got it quite right yet.
I don't care.
Violet takes the gum.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't.
So long as it's gum, it's for me.
Violet, now don't you do anything stupid.
Violet pops the gum in her mouth.
Well, what's it taste like?
Madness! It's tomato soup. It's hot and creamy. I can actually feel it running down my throat. It's delicious.
Stop! Don't!
Why doesn't she listen to Mr. Wonka?
Because, Charlie, she's a nitwit.
This sure is great soup. Hey, the second course is coming up. Roast beef and baked potato. Mmm.
With sour cream? Haha, what's for dessert, baby?
Dessert? Here it comes. Blueberry pie and cream. It's the most marvelous blueberry pie that I've ever tasted.
Holy Toledo, Violet. What's happening to your face?
Cool it, Dad. Let me finish.
Yeah, but your face is turning blue. Violet, you're turning violet.
What are you talking about?
I told you I hadn't got it quite right yet.
You can say that again. Look what it's done to my kid.
It always goes wrong when we come to the dessert. Always.
Violet, what are you doing now? You're blowing up!
I feel funny.
I'm not surprised.
What's happening?
You're blowing up like a balloon.
Like a blueberry.
Somebody do something. Call a doctor.
Stick her with a pin.
She'll pop.
It happens every time. They all become blueberries.
You've really done it this time, haven't you, Wonka? I'll break you for this.
Oh, well, I'll get it right in the end.
Wonka plays his part.
Help!
We've got to get the air out of her quick.
There's no air in here. That's juice.
Juice?
Enter Oompa Loompa.
Would you roll the young lady down to the juicing room at once, please?
What for?
For squeezing. She has to be squeezed immediately before she explodes.
Explodes?
It's a very simple operation.
Oompa Loompa doobity doo. I've got another puzzle for you. Oompa Loompa doobity dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me.
Gum chewing's fine when it's once in a while.
It stops you from smoking and brightens your smile. But it's repulsive, revolting, and wrong. Chewing and chewing all day long. The way that a cow does.
Oompa Loompa Doopity-Da. Giving good manners, you will go far. You will live in happiness too, like the Oompa Loompa Doopity-Doo.
I'll get even with you for this, Wonka, if it's the last thing I ever do. I've got a blueberry for a daughter.
Where is the fancy bread? In the heart or in the head? Shall we roll on? Well, 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 two naughty, nasty little children gone. Three good, sweet little children left. Hurry, please, long way to go yet.
Oh, and they're gonna go a long, long way. I hope you enjoyed Alice in Wonderland and the blueberry scene from Willy Wonka. A couple of my favorite plays. And another one was James and the Giant Peach, which we also did in the community center in Occidental as with Harmony School. For this, we're going to be doing a lot with the Aunt Spiker and the Aunt Sponge and James and Spider and Centipede. And stay tuned. Actually, I love the part. I love the part where the ants, especially Shayna playing Aunt Spiker. That stuck with me in my memory all these years, so that's why I called her to come and do it again. And she sounds exactly the same. And her son Emilio is here with us today playing James. He plays Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach and many others like the BFD, the Witches, and so many others were written by Roald Dahl. And all three of these plays actually were written by British Brits, as we Irish would say. And that's why we're so glad to have Arnold here and with his real authenticness. And he's going to be reading the introduction to James and the Giant Peach, which was actually written by Roald Dahl, and it's an amazing story. I'll be the narrator, and in the first scene where the mother and father are being chased by a rhinoceros, my daughter Tara will play the mother, and Emilio is the father. Bella is the spider. Arnold is also the centipede. And Jasmine is the ladybird, and I'm the narrator. Oh, I can't ever forget how we rolled the peach. We actually had a cutout of a huge peach. It was about 10 feet tall, and we had stairs leading up in the back. So we had all the insects sitting on top of the peach. But that was actually after the scene, and before the scene, actually we had the peach crashing through the fence, and then with the spotlight on it, going all the way around the community center in the back of the audience and back up on the stage again. It was really... Did they really go over you? Wow. We did some far out stuff. All right.
Just over our feet.
Oh, so it showed your feet sticking out. We didn't want to fake anything. As real as possible. Are we ready to hear from Roald Dahl himself?
Where my childhood lived.
Here we go.
James and the Giant Peach was my first book for children. I wrote it during the winter of 1960-61 in New York, and I started it because I wanted to attempt something different after 17 years of writing nothing but short stories for adults. I can remember vividly that I was sitting at my desk and playing around with the lines of The Centipede Song when my wife burst into the room and told me that our son Theo, then 3 months old, had been hit by a taxi cab while out in his pram with his nurse.
I dropped my pencil and we both rushed to the hospital. His head injuries were severe and almost fatal, and the next few months were desperate times, with brain operations and endless journeys through the snow to hospital and all the awful tensions that grip a mother and father when they are fighting to save their baby's life. When you're writing fantasy, which is a very different thing from writing fiction, you must be able, the moment you pick up the pencil, to shut out all normal surroundings and go flying away to a magic world where everything is enchanting and fantastic. You must lose sight of the room you are sitting in, and you must become deaf to all noises outside your window. Quite honestly, you must go into a sort of trance. That's why you never think about the story you're working on, except when you're at your desk and the dream world is upon you. I was able to switch off like this for about 3 hours a day during the fearful Theo crisis, and I found that it actually rested me and helped me to retain my sanity during those months. Thus, I finished James and delivered it to the publisher before the winter was out, and long before Theo had had his last brain operation. I know from the letters I get that many schools like to make plays from my children's books. The excellent adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by the American school teacher Richard George has been well received by teachers and children in several countries, and I believe that the splendid job he has done here on James and the Giant Peach will be equally useful. It is lovely to know that after 21 years, not only my son Theo, but also James are still both very much alive.
An unbelievable beginning to Roald Dahl's lively career as a youth book author of James and the Giant Peach, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, many, many others. Now, for the exciting scenes of from James and the Giant Peach.
Oh, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. Help, help somebody.
Hurry, Mrs. Trotter, hurry.
Oh, can't we sit down and rest?
Rest? With an escaped rhinoceros is trying to eat us up?
But I am tired.
Don't be ridiculous. It's gaining on us. Hurry.
I don't think we're going to make it, Mr. Trotter.
No, neither do I. Well, goodbye, Mrs. Trotter.
Goodbye, Mr. Trotter.
Wow, what a beginning to a story. Can you believe that? Well, I'm sorry to have to start this story with such a terrible event as a mother and father being swallowed up by an escaped rhinoceros. But I just had to tell you, it's because of this event that this story happened. You see, life was really great for our hero, James Henry Trotter, until this happened to his parents. Well, now he was sent away to live with his two aunts, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker. I am sorry to point out, but I must, that they were both really horrible people. They were selfish and lazy and cruel. And right from the beginning, they started beating poor James for almost no reason at all. They never called him by his real name, but always referred to him as, "You miserable creature, you disgusting little beast, or you filthy nuisance." And they certainly never gave him any toys to play with or any picture books to look at or read. His room was as bare as a prison cell. They lived, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and now James as well, in a queer ramshackle house on the top of a high hill in the south of England. The hill was so high that from almost anywhere in the garden, James could look down and see for miles and miles across a marvelous landscape of woods and fields. And on a very clear day, if he looked in the right direction, he could see a tiny gray dot far away on the horizon, which was the house that he used to live in with his beloved mother and father. And just beyond that, he could see the sea itself, a long, thin streak of bluish black, like a line of ink beneath the rim of the sky. But then there came a morning when something rather peculiar happened to him. It all started on a blazing hot day in the middle of summer. Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker and James were all out in the garden. James had been put to work as usual. This time he was chopping wood for the kitchen stove. Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker were sitting comfortably in their deck chairs nearby, sipping tall glasses of fizzy lemonade and watching him to see that he didn't stop working for one moment. Let's take a closer look at what's happening.
Sponge! Sponge! Come here at once and look at this.
At what?
A peach! Right up there on the highest branch. Can't you see it?
You're teasing me, Spiker. You're making my mouth water on purpose when there's nothing to be put into it. Why, that tree never's been a blossom on it, let alone a peach.
There's one on it now, Sponge. You look for yourself.
Very funny. Ha ha. Oh, my gracious me. There really is a peach up there. Now, it's at this point in our story that James feels that something peculiar is about to happen any moment. Hey, you! Come over here, Watson. Climb that tree. I want you to pick that peach up there on the highest branch. Can you see it?
Yes, Auntie Sponge, I can see it.
And don't you dare eat any of it for yourself. Your Auntie Spiker and I are going to have it between us right here and now, half each. Get on with it. Up you go.
Stop! Hold everything. Look! Look, Sponge, look!
What's the matter with you?
It's growing. It's getting bigger and bigger.
What is?
The peach, of course.
Oh, but my dear Spiker, that's perfectly ridiculous. That's impossible. That's... No! That can't be right! No! Why, yes! Great Scott! The thing is really growing!
Great Caesar's ghost! I can actually see the thing bulging and swelling before my very eyes.
Oh! Ever stop growing!
Get away from that tree trunk, you stupid boy. The slightest shake and it will fall and break.
Stand back! The branch is bending right down! I can't believe it! But the branch isn't breaking!
Hallelujah! What a peach!
Oh, terrifico! Magnifico! Splendifico! And what a meal! He's ripe! He's just perfect! Hey, now, see here, Spiker. Why don't we go and get us a shovel right away and dig out a great big hunk of it for you and me to eat?
No, not yet.
But oh, I can't wait to eat some!
My dear Sponge, there's a pile of money to be made out of this, if only we can handle it right. You wait and see.
So, in the next scene, the ants are collecting money from the many onlookers who are curious. There is a fence around the peach area to keep the people out.
Roll up, roll up. Only 10 pence to see the giant peach.
Off price for children under 2 weeks old.
One at a time, please. Don't push, don't push. You're all going to get in. Hey, you, come back there. You haven't paid.
It'll cost you double to bring in a camera. All right.
All right, all right, all right. We don't care.
Aren't you glad we put bars on that James's window?
That disgusting little brute would only get in our way if we let him wander about.
Can you believe he complained about his being lonely just because he hasn't had other children for years and years?
What nerve. Here we are, just about to become millionaires, and the only thing he can think of is himself.
Gee, everybody has gone home. Maybe we should close up for the night, Spiker.
Maybe you're right, Sponge. We'll get the brat to clean up the mess out here.
He's probably want something to eat, since he hasn't had anything all day.
Well, he'd better not ask. We're too busy to make food.
That's right.
We have to count our money.
That's right.
I'd better call him to make sure the worm isn't asleep. Creep! Brat! Wake up, you twerp! We have something for you to do immediately.
James walks out into the yard.
Gee, it's really dark out here tonight. I even hear a sound. It's strangely quiet. Boy, am I hungry. I suppose I should be more considerate of my aunts, though. Aunt Spiker says that all I do is single myself. Maybe she's right. Gee, it's kind of spooky.
Can you imagine how James feels right now? Have you ever been out alone on a dark, quiet night? Well, here is where James knows. He can just feel it in his bones that something stranger than ever this time is about to happen to him again. He's sure of it. He can feel it coming.
Everything is so different. Suddenly, the whole place seems to be alive with magic. Wow, it feels sort of warm. It's a little furry, like the skin of a baby mouse. What's that? I don't believe it. But there's a hole in the side. It's quite a large hole, the sort of thing an animal about the size of a fox might make.
James kneels down and crawls inside.
This isn't just a hole, it's a tunnel. Boy, it's really damp and murky in here. These walls are wet and sticky, and it tastes like peat juice dripping from the ceiling. Delicious. Now it's going uphill towards the very center. Ouch! What's this? It seems like a solid wall. It feels like wood, except this is very jagged and full of deep grooves. Good grief! I know what this is. I've come to the stone in the middle of the peach, and here is what appears to be a small door cut into the face of the stone. Let's see now. There, it's swung open. What's that light?
Look who's here!
We've been waiting for you.
Oh, no.
I'm hungry.
I'm famished.
So am I.
Everyone's famished. We need food.
Aren't you hungry?
Oh, no.
Oh, what's the matter with you? You look positively ill.
He looks as if he's going to faint any second.
You mustn't be frightened. We wouldn't dream of hurting you. You're one of us now. Didn't you know that? You are one of the crew. We're all in the same boat. Grasshopper, earthworm, silkworm, myself, and you.
So, why don't we get to the top of and get started?
What's going on?
In case you don't know it, we're about to depart from the top of this ghastly hole that we've been living on for so long. We're about to roll away inside of this great, beautiful peach to a land of...
Of what?
Never you mind, but nothing could be worse than this desolate hilltop and those two repulsive aunts of yours.
You may not have noticed it, but the whole garden, even before it reaches the steep edge of the hill, happens to be on a steep slope. And therefore, the only thing that has been stopping this peach from rolling away right from the beginning is this thick stem attaching it to the tree. Break the stem, and off we go!
There's no knowing what we shall see.
We may see a creature with 49 heads who lives in a desolate snow. Whenever he catches a cold which he dreads, he has 49 noses to blow. We may see a dragon and nobody knows that we won't see a unicorn there. We may see a terrible monster with toes growing out of the tufts of his hair. We may see the sweet little bitty bright hen, so playful, so kind and well-bred. And such beautiful eggs, you just boil them and then they explode and blow off your head. But who cares? Let us go from this horrible hill. Let us roll, let us bowl, let us plunge. Let's go rolling and bowling and spinning until we're away from old Spiker and Sponge.
The next morning, the ants are standing outside, waiting for people to come so that they can make more money.
Why did we have to get up so early, Spiker? Why, it's still dark outside.
Well, if an early bird catches the worm, then two early ants will catch the suckers. Ha, ha, ha.
That's very funny. But I don't get it, Spiker. What do you mean?
Money. We're out here to make money, Sponge.
Oh, yeah.
Get it? Make money. M-O-N-E-Y. Mm. We shall make a fortune today. Just look at all those people coming up the hill.
I wonder what become of that horrid little boy of ours last night. He didn't come in, back in, did he?
He probably fell down in the dark and broke his leg.
Maybe his neck, maybe.
Just wait till I get my hands on him. He'll never want to stay out all night again by the time I've finished with him. Good gracious me, what's that awful noise?
Spiker, I know this sounds silly, but it looks as if the fence is breaking. And the peach is about to...
Are you ill, Sponge? Are you? You must be.
Oh, no.
No,
move, Spiker, out of my way.
Shove off, Sponge, me first.
No. Stay away. Well, anyway, you'll never believe it, but the giant peach is still moving. It's rolling and bouncing down the steep slope at a terrific pace. It's going faster and faster and faster. And the crowds of people who were climbing up the hill have suddenly caught sight of it plunging down upon them. They're streaming and screaming and scattering to the right and to the left. It's just knocked over a telegraph pole and flattened two parked cars. It's rushing madly across the 20 fields. Just look at those cows and sheep and horses stampeding in all directions. Hey, you would scatter too if a giant peach were coming after you. Oh, no. It's rolling and rolling. Oh, no. It's heading for the towering white cliffs that are so famous in the whole of England. They're hundreds of feet high. And below them, the sea is deep and cold and hungry. Many ships and men have swallowed up on that lost forever on that part of the coast. The peach is now only 100 yards away from the cliff. Now 50, now 20, now 10, now 5. It's gone over. Down, down, down. What a colossal splash. Wow, it sank like a stone. Wait, I see something coming. Well, the peach is coming back up. It's on the surface of the sea.
Why in the middle of the sea?
And floating beautifully.
Yay! And the patients, we'd now like to read you something extra special. You've heard from James and the Giant Peach, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and Alice in Wonderland. There are many more things. The Hobbit, we did The Hobbit, and we did Alice. What other ones do we do? There's about a dozen of them. Can't think of them all right now, but what I'd like to see. And so we want to thank Shayna and Emilio and Jasmine and Bella and Arnold for being, and Tara for being here and sticking it out and doing such a great job. Don't you think they did a wonderful job?
Yay!
Yeah. It touched my heart. And now, as a special added attraction, we'd like to read one of the skits that my niece Isabella Negri wrote for her admissions application to the University of Southern California, and I think this was part of why she was accepted into the screenwriting program of the Cinematic Arts Department of USC. She has also been the student body president for El Molino with her boyfriend. And we would like to read this one play because we have the right actors for it. So Tara and I are actually going to do it. And you can see why they chose her, because it's a really good little skit that could be aired on a television program anytime. So all she was given was a challenge to write a skit about someone who, for about two people, one they live together, and one likes to go out, and the other one doesn't. That's all she was given, and this is what she came up with. Carol Schwartz, 50, comes up the fifth flight of stairs wearing athletic clothes and carrying two bags of groceries. She's softly singing Abba's Lay All Your Love on Me, and one-handedly digging into her purse for keys. Carol struggles to open the door to her apartment and holding on to the grocery bags. After much frustration, she stops singing and trips into the apartment. Talking to her daughter, who is Sophie Schwartz, 23, sprawled out on the sofa with unkempt hair, wearing a Hofstra University sweatshirt, watching Sex and the City, and eating a protein bar. It's good to see you've moved since this morning. Was my bed getting too uncomfortable for you?
Well, if you're being completely honest, you used too many pillows. I either had to get out of there or suffer from face suffocation.
Carol, staring blankly at her daughter, walks over to the kitchen and starts unpacking groceries. Have you engaged in anything intellectually stimulating today? Maybe thought about hitting the pavement, joining the workforce, paying some taxes?
I have no idea why your generation is so obsessed with my generation becoming employed. When you were in your 20s, you'd already found my father, settled down, and popped out a kid. You were set for life. Nowadays, there isn't an option. There are 19 million people living in the city, half of them being guys who are either gay or married. So the only thing I have is to hopelessly find a career.
Carol finishes with her groceries and goes and sits next to Sophie. So go do it, honey.
Mom, I would, but the world is simply not ready to accept my talents. It's as if Mother Earth is whispering, "Stay home, Soph. We don't need you yet." I mean, that's a pretty powerful voice. How am I supposed to face that?
You're smart. You have a college degree. It may be a degree in art history, but I'm sure there's some upper-level management office you could be a secretary for. Even that would be 100 times better than whatever this is. Carol motions to the multiple Quest protein bars wrappers sitting around Sophie, then picks one up. Come on. They aren't even good. You've been here for a month, and I'm not going to let you wall yourself up any longer. You're basically living the life of a hidden fugitive, except you lack the confidence. Sophie scowls at her mother, then the scowl slowly turns into a smile, then a small laugh. Okay, daughter of mine, I have an idea. I've been getting pretty friendly with the folks down there at the gym, and they're hiring. What do you say we go down there and get you something to do, instead of wasting away watching the women who are actually making something of their lives? Motioning to the TV set. Then we can go get a celebratory drink at Gianetto's down the street.
Oh, I definitely can't do that. That would mean actually getting my shit together, which is not in today's forecast. And it would entail drinking with my mother, which I'm pretty sure is illegal.
You are way too young to be such a stick in the mud. I actually can't believe my 23-year-old daughter is resisting the social world while I'm begging her to rejoin it.
You probably got a good and active batch of menopause hormones, leaving me at a disadvantage. Us women without unfertile eggs and weekly Zumba see the world as it is, unpromising.
Carol stands up and to turn off the TV with a small, lazy protest from Sophie. All right, well, I'm going to go take a shower. And when I come out, I want you out of that dingy old sweatshirt and into something that says, "I'm too overeducated to work at this gym, but I'll offer my services anyway."
Not a chance.
Sophie gets up, turns back on the TV, and grabs another Quest bar. I think that's pretty clever, don't you? The other one's just as good. She also has a challenge of two people that don't want to be in an elevator together, but they are. We haven't practiced it, and we have it needs a boy and two men. So we're not going to be reading that, but it's just as good. She's done a wonderful job, and it's no wonder that she's been a wonderful girl to her mom and to sports and everything. She's done a great job, and she certainly deserves the best. Good luck, Isabella. You deserve it. All right, gang, we did it.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, thank you. This is very special. Next week, we're going to do a play called Pizza that was actually written by Michelle Infante. It's not next week. It's 2 weeks from now. Every second and fourth Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock, from 8 to 9, but it can stretch over. That's a whole play, an hour's worth of one act. It's written by Michelle, who actually it's her life story. She was raised in an Italian in New Jersey, and her mother actually did have a pizza parlor, and all the things and all the characters that are in the play are hilarious and true. So please join us on May 25th, that's 2 weeks from now, for our next exciting episode of Radio Drama. Oh, and I also wanted to say that, thanks very much to Cal's Radio for having us and supporting us in doing this Reader's Theater. And we actually, the material and the actors from this are in part came from the Reader's Theater group that I joined just a couple of months ago, at the Occidental Center for the Arts. They have every second and fourth Tuesday evening, this coming Tuesday on the 13th, they have a Reader's Theater group where we read plays, we bring plays to read, or the leader, Judith Reimuller, brings plays, and it's been going on for about a year. So they've come up with some really wonderful material, and the actors that fuel this show. So if you ever, actually it's a drop-in free program class that you can come in, sit into at your will. There's no commitment, there's no cost, and there's no rehearsal, and it's just for that one time, as often as you want. Please do join us, we'd love to have you. Let's go have some pizza at the Union.